This is episode number one.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendlin and his network of Road Trekking reporters.
Well, how about that, everybody? Here we go. This is a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. Now, whether you have a Class B motorhome, like the Road Trek Jennifer and I travel in, or a Class C, a Class A, a fifth wheel, pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent or are just thinking about getting an RV, this show is for you. We talk about the lifestyle, about getting out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people and places, and sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right, looking good, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking is all about, the RV lifestyle. And we welcome you. We thank you so much for being a part of what we are about to embark upon with this very first of many weekly sessions on our podcast. So the question that I always get, and I think is one that we should probably answer right away as we begin this this series of podcasts, is what is this all about? How did you, a journalist, end up doing that? And why? What's your point here? Well, if I could have a quarter for every time I've been asked that about roadtrekking.com, our RV blog, I'd probably be able to buy another motorhome. But this is really has been a dream come true for me. Decades in the making, and now my wife and I are living this out like a giant movie that we see through the wide expanse of our motorhome's windshield as North America rolls by. We love doing it. We love sharing it. And it's all very serendipity. If you look up serendipity, it means a happy accident or a pleasant surprise, something fun and enjoyable, useful that you discovered by happenstance along the way. That's kind of what the small motorhome lifestyle is all about. A perfect description of what Jennifer and I find every day as this new wandering life of ours unfolds. Now, this started back in early 2012. Jennifer and I bought a Class B motorhome after years of dreaming, and we started a blog. I kind of write everything I do on a blog. I'm a journalist, as I said. I'm a reporter, and I share it all. And I kind of just did this as a way to share with friends and family about seeing North America and enjoying our little motorhome and finding some stories along the way. Well, we did that, and it took off like crazy. Today, it is now being read by about 250 to 300,000 people every month, and we just share our life. And along the way, we've picked up a whole network of other people who do the same thing. I call that our Road Trekking Reporter Network, and you'll meet many of them in these podcasts. This is about the RV lifestyle that our motorhome allows us and the great things you can do out there. Just by background, I am a journalist. It's in my DNA, man. I have to tell stories. I love meeting people. I love learning and seeing new things. Seeing this awesome continent that God has blessed us with. I like to take photos and do videos, and I've been doing journalism like this for well more than four decades now, for major newspapers, TV networks, radio stations, magazines, written 6 books, won a bunch of Emmy Awards and all sorts of stuff. But here's the thing. As a journalist, I used to travel so much that, it kind of lost its allure to me. One of my employers, the Detroit News, when I first started doing investigative reporting and traveling around, I actually took out an ad one time in a journalism trade magazine because I was, and they referred to me as one of America's most well-traveled reporters. And I did. I was everywhere, like that Johnny Cash song, everywhere, man. A lot of it, parachute journalism. I'd fly in, I'd cover the story, I'd fly out sometimes the same day or if there was scenery and skylines, that was just a backdrop for my TV bits. I remember so many times looking out at a mountain range or across some valley or in some small town or metropolis, or just wanted to spend time there to walk the streets, to go for a hike, climb the hills, experience, the sights and sounds and smells of a place. And of course, meet the people. But that seldom happened. It was always another story in another place. Now, don't get me wrong. I love those journalism days. I had a front row window seat to history. I covered presidents and movie stars and CEOs and government leaders, even the Queen of England and the Pope. They were pretty cool days. But as we approached retirement age, I knew that I missed a lot of stories out there. And I guess I'm not saying anything that you don't already know on how the media has just, it's fallen on hard times. They've gotten more and more sensational. I wasn't happy with the kinds of stories that I was asked to do. And I knew that we were missing a lot of stories. We were just concentrating on the bad news. And there were great stories about people and places and things that make the U.S. and Canada such wonderful places to live. The kind of good news, the general interest stories that hard-nosed editors and news directors just skip over in favor of the controversial or the sensational, the down and dirty. The world of big media today, look at it. It just concentrates on strife and tragedy and bad news, and there really isn't much time for good news. Well, in retirement, as my own boss, I decided I wanted to go back and actually see and experience the country and tell those good news stories that I'm convinced people were hungry for. And it was an RV, a little motorhome, that was our solution. So we got one, my wife and I, our Norwegian Elkhound tie, and we set off to meet people and discover places and take to the road and just have a great time out there doing whatever we wanted. Well, it took off. The blog is there. I still do, by the way, I still do work. I work for NBC TV News Channel, which is the service that provides content to all of the NBC TV affiliates. And I do a PC Mic Tech Report every week. Have been doing that for all 215 stations since 1994. Still do it. And many times I do it right from the road, from our RV. So that's kind of my story. We began the blog, roadtrekking.com, in March of 2012. And since then, we've probably covered about 75,000 miles. Typically, we'll mark out a route and identify a few spots that we want to visit and then take off. And we stop when we feel like it or whenever we find something that interests us. I had an old editor once that said that every person has a story to tell. So my journalism career has told me that's true. And it's the same with places. And so that's what we've been doing. And we've met many friends. And here we are today now launching a podcast. Now, I should point out that while Road Trek Motorhomes, that's the kind of the motorhome I have, is a sponsoring partner for my blog and that we have a very close and warm relationship, and they've given me very frequent access to company executives and their factory in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada, I am not an official employee of Road Trek. I'm an independent journalist. I just happen to like the Class B motorhome lifestyle and the blog, this podcast, this is a labor of my love. It's all my own work and that of the road trekking reporters who contribute. And even if I didn't have any advertisers or support, I'd still be doing this because, like I say, I like to tell stories. It's in my DNA. So that's my story, and I am sticking to it. And this is our very first episode. So what is it going to be like? Well, this is kind of the routine we'll follow. We're going to do a lot of stuff. Today's show, though, I want to talk about a bucket list. Everybody, particularly RVers, have a bucket list. So what are the most popular? I took a little microphone around and interviewed a bunch of RVers over the past several months, past year or so, and I've got a bunch of answers collected. And you can listen and see how many of you have been to and what do you think is the most popular, the most common place on their bucket list. You'll be able to know that and answer that as soon as you hear that this little interview segment coming up. Also, what's it like actually getting along in an RV? Husband, wife, a dog like we have. We've learned some hard lessons, my wife and I, about how to get along and survive two people and a dog in a small RV. So we're going to offer up our top 10 tips for that. And here's the segment I think everybody's going to really get a kick out of. Have you ever thought about just getting rid of the house, getting in an RV and taking off, selling the house, selling all your junk, all that stuff, and just full timing? The road trekking reporter Camp Skunk is part of our road trekking reporter network, and he is an expert, and he's offered a very helpful look for us at what it takes to be a full timer. Why full timing is not for everyone. Believe me, it's not. But for those who are interested, and particularly those in a small motorhome, he's going to talk about how they handle their finances and their medical needs when they're moving around a lot and don't have a permanent address, about shopping and laundering on the road. This is must-hear information if full-timing is something you've ever considered, no matter what kind of an RV you want to hear from Camp Snunk. And, of course, we will have lots of questions and comments from readers, and we look forward to that. And we'll also have news. Lots of news.
News. Mike's got news.
RV news. Travel news. Tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, there's a lot happening. Let's start with how big this road trekking or this RV industry is. We got some new statistics. They're always a couple months old. This is actually from August of 2014. But this big boom that we've seen in the RV industry is continuing. The shipments of recreational vehicles to dealers rose another 5.8%, which is continuing a growth trend we've seen now for almost 2 years. The Recreation Vehicle Industry Association says shipments reached 26,441 units in August. That topped the very successful numbers from a year ago at that time. According to the RVIA, the most popular RV was towables, trailers, towable RVs, fifth wheels and trailers had the largest unit gains. But motorhomes grew by the largest percentage point. There were 3,964 motorhomes shipped. That's a 20% gain over August of 2013. Motorhomes represented 15% of all shipments in August. And by the way, according to the RVIA, the Class B motorhomes have grown by the largest percentage, accounting for those boosts in sales, the largest percentage of any of the motorhomes. So there you go. The business is doing good. We had a story on the roadtrekking.com blog that got a lot of controversy, particularly on our Facebook group and our Facebook page, and on the blog post itself about well, it was kind of the unspoken topic, but everybody does it, and everybody wonders about it that if they're not doing it, and that's carrying a gun in an RV. A lot of pros and cons and a lot of controversy on that, but one place you do not want to bring a gun is into Canada. We've talked about this many times on the blog and on Facebook, but just as an example on this, a former Mesa, Arizona justice of the peace is in the RV news this week because he had two loaded handguns in his motorhome when he tried to cross the Canadian border into British Columbia earlier this year. And that's gone through the court system. He's now been fined $2,500. But you need to know that you can't bring handguns into Canada, even if you got a permit in the U.S. A lawyer appeared in British Columbia Provincial Court in Abbotsford on behalf of 56-year-old Markle K. Childs, and he pled guilty to two charges, smuggling or attempting to smuggle goods into Canada and unauthorized possession of a firearm. There were about five other charges on him, but they stayed those. This all stemmed from last May. Childs was on his way into to Alaska from the U.S., and he drove up to the Huntington border crossing in Abbotsford in British Columbia in his motorhome. And he was just going to drive through Canada and meet his wife and parents in Alaska and spend the summer up there. And he says that he's anxious. He doesn't like to fly. So he got the motorhome and he was driving instead of flying. And they found the guns in a secondary inspection at the border. They were two guns, and he was carrying them right if he was in the States. They were in a locked metal box under the passenger seat. When he was questioned, he said he didn't know where the guns, he forgot the guns were even in his vehicle, didn't know it, and he thought that they belonged to a friend and to his son. And anyway, this thing went on. They actually seized his motorhome, and they assessed him a big $2,000 penalty to get it out of there while this was going through, and then this just went through the court system, and he paid $2,500. So the bottom line is, if you do carry a firearm in your motorhome or in your RV, and you're going to Canada, you're going to be in trouble if they find it. Big trouble. I mean, there are people who've gone to jail for this. So do not carry firearms into Canada. And no matter how you feel about the whole issue of firearms and guns, one place you don't even want to talk about that and bring them is Canada. All right. Now let's get on to surviving in a motorhome. That's our news of the week. What on earth do you do when you don't have nearly the room that you thought you had in your house? Remember, you can move around your house and you're going to go off on a long trip. And maybe it's just a weekend if you're starting off. But if you're brand new to RVing or if you've been along for a while, you will soon find, if you haven't already, that you do get in each other's way a lot. So my wife Jennifer and I have kind of put together this little guide, 10 tips that we learned the hard way to surviving life in a small motorhome. On a recent trip in our road trek, Jennifer and I were doing some stuff, and, well, I forgot we were in a 22-foot-long motorhome until she said,
"I need a little bit of space with you not in it."
I withdrew immediately. But the incident got me thinking. You see, there's really not a whole lot of room in there. So to survive and enjoy the adventure, we've come up with our top 10 rules for getting along in a motorhome.
Rule number one, if you have problems getting along at home, don't expect it to be easier in a motorhome. Two people can share the same space, but the most important rule is mutual respect and don't try to do two different things in the same space.
Rule number two, don't overpack. You really don't need to have any more than, say, a 3-day supply of food or clothes. You can do laundry on the road, and you can buy food locally where it's the freshest.
Rule number three, everything has a place and a place for everything. Agree beforehand where you're going to store things. When done using, return them to that place and nowhere else.
Rule number four, if you travel with pets, assign them a space too. Dogs and cats love to know where they're supposed to be. Assign them their spot in the motorhome and train them to sleep there, not in front of the bathroom door where you'll trip on them in the middle of the night.
Rule number five, as much as possible, plan ahead those meals. Grill outside, and if you dirty a dish or glass, clean it. Put it away right away after eating.
Don't overdrive. Going any more than 350, 400 miles in a day is going to tire you out. Remember, you're motorhoming because it's fun. Driving too far and too long makes everybody cranky.
Rule number seven, stay fit. Exercise. Don't pack on those extra pounds. Take long walks. Bring a bike. Find and visit health clubs along the way. Too much sitting, like too much driving, isn't good for anyone.
Rule number eight, explore. Use Google or the internet or your GPS to find interesting spots in the towns and the places that you're passing. Visit a museum, learn the location's history, try to eat at a locally owned restaurant instead of fast food places. Don't be in such a hurry all the time.
Rule number nine, be careful buying souvenirs. Your motorhome only has so much space. Ship the must-have things home instead of jamming every available storage spot with things that aren't essential for being on the road.
Rule number 10, this is the big one. When you're wrong, admit it. Conflict is inevitable. Jen, I'm sorry I invaded your space back there.
Don't hesitate to forgive. That's okay. You're forgiven.
You're listening to Road Trekking, the podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. From the blog, just click the send voicemail button. That's at roadtrekking.com, the small motorhome RV travel blog. Travel blog.
There you go. We'd love to get your questions and comments, so be sure and use that link. You get over to the roadtrekking.com blog, look over on the far right side, a little black bar there. It'll come up, and you click it, and you just use your microphone in your tablet or in your smartphone or on your computer, and you can leave a question. Just send it off to me, and we'll do our best to answer them on upcoming episodes of the Road Trekking RV Travel Small Lifestyle Podcast. So, we all like to travel, right? We have all sorts of places that we love to go We call it a bucket list.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Well, actually, I'm going to do something a little different on this very first one. I'm going to do a survey. I have been asking people for, much of the last year and a half, what's on your bucket list? Where do you want to go? I've collected all of the different places that people think that they want to go that's on the top of their list, and I wonder what you think is the most popular. What do you think? Maybe you can figure it out from this.
I would like to see New England in the fall and Nova Scotia in the summer.
Probably Alaska or the Pacific Northwest.
We want to go to Prince Edward Island up in Canada.
Well, Alaska, if they had a little bit longer summer season, would be great, but I'd like to volunteer at like Denali or one of the state parks up there and really spend some time and get to know it.
Okay, we got two things. Very first one is going to be a trip to Albuquerque for the Balloon Festival. We're supposed to go last year and had to cancel at the last minute, so we're sending in our reservations for that. And then we're hoping to get hooked up with the people and probably a trip to Alaska next year.
Anywhere I can dip my toes in the ocean.
Next on my bucket list, I want to go back to Maine and eat lots and lots of lobster.
Alaska.
We're going to P.I.
P.I. Howdy. Back to Alaska, actually.
Jerry, what'd you like to go see?
Haven't made it yet.
Up the California coast.
See Alaska and stay for a month.
My next thing on the bucket list is Prince Edward Island in Canada.
The Grand Canyon.
Every ballpark in our road trek and just spend the entire baseball season taking that on.
Traveling's okay, but there's no place like home.
There you go, no place like home. Well, did you catch it? My unscientific survey, and I think it's probably pretty accurate, is Alaska. Alaska seems to be the very top of all the bucket lists of all the RVers that we've been able to talk to over the last year and a half and ask that question across North America. So there you go. Alaska is on your bucket list. You been there? Well, let us know what you think. You can use that voicemail message on the roadtrekking.com blog and tell us about your favorite places as well. We'll feature them in upcoming episodes. Pretty darn cool stuff. So that's where we are with the destination of the week. Now, on future episodes, I'm going to pick a spot and tell you about it and what we like about it, what we didn't like about it. And we'll would love to hear if you've got some places you want us to check out. Let us know as well. You can send us an email or however you want to do it.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers.
Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hello, Mike. My name is Robert, and I own a RS Adventurous Road Trek motorhome, and I know you have a similar vehicle. I would like to know how you and your wife sleep in that, in the bed, the sofa bed that makes up in the back. Do you use that as a king or as twins? What are the things that you use to make it more comfortable? Do you use a topper? And what do you sleep in? Do you have a sleeping bag, or could you share that? We just purchased this used vehicle, and we will be heading to Florida this winter and want to know all of the different options. My wife and I really enjoy your blog, the Road Trekking blog, and we thank you for all you do. I look forward to your answer. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Robert. We appreciate that. And you're going to have a great time. You're just going to have a ball. Wait till you discover this new lifestyle that's awaiting you out there as you go road trekking. Well, we have a Class B camper van, and it like many of them, it has a bed in the back that makes up this little switch, and it will make up into a king. You have to put a little plank between the two edges of the sofa, and then it will cover it right up. Or you can make it up in twins. And we've tried it both ways. I mean, let's face it, the twins setup works very well, because if you have to get up in the middle of the night, and we do, to use the bathroom, you can easily get up without disturbing the other person. So we've tried it that way. And we also use it as the king. In fact, I think most of the time we sleep in the king setting. It's just more comfortable. It is big. It's spacious. We often talk that we sleep better in our RV than we do on our sleep number bed at our Sticks and Bricks home back in Michigan. So we like that. Now, what do we sleep in? Well, we bought something called the RV Super Bag, and I'll put a link up on the post here on the blog, on the roadtrekking.com blog with this, and you can go and check it out. We did a video on it. You can look at that. They're very expensive. I should tell you that. There's other cheaper solutions you can get, but we like this. It has really good high quality. I think it's a 300 or 500 stitch Egyptian linen. I don't know whether it's 300 or 500. I can't remember offhand, but it's very comfortable. And it Velcros into the bedding. There's a upper side that's winter for when it's cold, or you can flip it around and sleep on the summer side so it's not so heavy on you when you're in the summertime. And we just like that. We have a king-size RV super bag, and then we bought two twin sizes. So we kind of go back and forth. It depends on how long we're going to be gone, whether we use the twins or whether we use the king. Right now, I'd say over the last year when we've done a ton of traveling, we've used the king every night. We've only used the doubles a couple of times. And if I go someplace alone and Jennifer's not with me and I'm on a business trip or something, I'm in the road trek, I'll just bring the single and sleep on one side of it. So there we go. And as to what we sleep on, what do we sleep on? Well, we sleep on a hunk of foam, two hunks of foam. We picked them up at the REI store. And they're two single sizes. We just put them right side by side next to each other, and they're very comfortable. We also had, at one point, for the first year and a half or so, we used a topper, a big 4-inch topper that we picked up at a Bed Bath & Beyond king size. And it was very big. It was very comfortable. But after about a year and a half or so of using it, it started to get a little lumpy, and it was very hard to store. It just took up a tremendous amount of room. And so we tried this foam earlier this year, and the foam has worked really well. We just we store it up in an upper cabinet at the back of our road trek and pull it down at night, put it down. We sleep on it. I think they're 1.5 inches thick, maybe 2 inches, and they're very comfortable, and they fit great. So hope that answered your question, Robert. All right, moving on to the big interview of this podcast. You're going to meet a really good friend of mine, and he's probably the star of our Road Trekking Reporter Network. You know him as the Camp Skunk, and that is not his real name, of course, but he's now become so famous that that's what everybody calls him, and they know exactly who we're talking about. Camp Skunk will tell us a little bit about how he got that nickname and why he uses it. But I think what you're going to really enjoy is his take on full timing. Everybody, it seems, who gets into the RV wonders about, could we do this full time? You know, we enjoy it so much. This lifestyle is so much fun. Could we do it full time? Well, Camp's guy's going to tell us how he does it. He, his wife, and their cat is known as Fianna the Fearless. It's a beautiful little ragdoll cat that they travel with. And they'll tell us how they do that. But the big line is it's not for everybody, as you'll hear. So this is a pretty good extensive interview. All your questions that you want answered about Camp Skunk coming up right now.
What's with the name Camp Skunk? Who is Camp Skunk, and what does Camp Skunk mean?
Well, it's just a name that I ended up with as an email name and so forth as a combination of for me and my wife. Her last name is Campbell, and that's where the camp comes from. And I was one of my many jobs was as a quality assurance inspector for a healthcare delivery system. And so I was not particularly welcome when I showed up by the people that I was inspecting. And they would tend to, you know, bail out of the doors and windows as I went in the front door of any building. One of the supervisors said it looked like Pepe Le Pew walking in the front door the way they bailed out of there. So I became the skunk after that. And so I just use it. I don't like to use my real name on the internet because of some of the work I did. But uh, uh, I it's people don't forget it, and I know how to spell it, so it works for me.
I always thought that Camp Skunk meant, you know, the skunk that goes into a camp and kind of ruins a camping trip. So I'm kind of glad to have the real story.
It's just a testament to my rudimentary social skills here.
We know a lot of people full-time in fifth wheels and in Class A's, even some Class C's. But there's not a lot of full-timers in Class B's. Is it for everybody, or what kind of compromises do you have to make?
I would not recommend it for everyone.
My wife would be leaving me now if I said we're going to go follow Camp Skunk. In fact, she threatens me. She says, "You're not going to make me live like Camp Skunk, are you?" And I said,
I'm trying to like the way Camp Skunk lives. I'm trying to be a bad example for as many people as possible. But you know, Jennifer's right. It's not for everyone. You have to be able to operate in a confined space and you have to get along with very few things. You can't drag around all the stuff you've been, you know, storing in boxes all over your house for umpteen years. You have to pare it down to a very small amount of very essential things. And that's what we did. Every time we come back to my home base here, where I visit my relatives on an annual basis, we don't really have a house. I have some boxes in my sister's attic, and into those boxes every year goes more stuff that we didn't use, you know. So we're slowly getting it down to what we absolutely have to carry, and so we're not really adding that much. But
and the thing, I guess, the lesson is we don't really need nearly as much stuff as we think we do, right?
It's true. I have been able to get along with very little stuff. But here's how I do it. I always stay in very nice weather. You know, being free to go wherever I want to, it's always somewhere between 40 and 80 degrees. So I don't have, you know, much of, you know, big heavy winter clothes and all that other stuff that would be hard to carry. I have long sleeve and short sleeve shirts and shorts and long pants and a couple of pairs of shoes and a windbreaker, and that's all I need. You know, so
you'll follow the weather. Give us a rough idea of the circle you make and when you decide to move, how long you stay in a spot, and the places that you choose to stay.
I always start out the year visiting my family who is in Florida over the holidays. And as it warms up into February and March, I go out, I make a big clockwise loop. So I head on out to Texas, Big Bend, South Texas, in southern New Mexico. By March, that is warm enough to start camping out down in the desert. As you get into April and May, you can go up in altitude from there. So I either go up into the mountains north, you know, straight up into Colorado and on up, or I go out to the Pacific Coast Highway, which after the middle of April or so is really nice weather out there. And of course, it's cool all summer on the ocean. If I stay inland, I end up going, you know, up to 10,000 feet by July, and so I'm somewhere way up on a mountain in Colorado or Montana or so forth through the middle of the summer. And as it cools down, I usually start heading south and downhill and work my way back to Florida by Thanksgiving or so. That's my schedule when I really don't have to be anywhere.
Now, how do you handle things like dentists and doctors and getting prescriptions and all the little things that we think we need a real address for, ordering stuff online and getting stuff delivered to you? How do you handle all of that when you're living full-time in essentially a camper van?
That is an aggravation. It's one of the few aggravations I have. But as we've gone around, we know where we're going to be roughly certain times of the year. So we have an East Coast and a West Coast dentist, so we can get all our cleanings done and emergency work if we need it. So we're always fairly near a dentist that we can get our stuff done. Prescription drugs are a problem. I am on one of these insurance plans that insist on mail order things. So they mail everything back to my nominal mailing address in Florida, and then it has to be forwarded to me. I'll usually just pick it up at a UPS store or FedEx location near where I am. For $5, they'll hold a package for you. And so it's kind of an aggravation, but we can get it done.
And you do the same thing with, I would guess, bill paying. You can do so much of that online now.
Yeah, I really do just about everything online. My vehicle tag renewal is just a little sticker, and I can do that online, and the folks back in Florida mail me the sticker, and I'm good to go.
What do you do about that online connection? A lot of us use cell phones as we travel, but you really do need to be online regularly, and I happen to know what your solution is, but maybe you could share it with people and give them some advice if they're thinking of the same thing.
Okay. I have a Verizon MiFi card, which works off the cell phone network, and if you're within range of a cell phone, you've got good internet. This is 5 gigs for about $50 a month.
Now, that's what I have, but I know where you camp, and you camp far removed from the grid, so to speak. You are truly off the grid. How do you do internet out there?
Okay, about half the time I'm out of cell phone range, and so I just turn the phone off, and I get out my satellite internet dish, which is, it looks like a TV satellite dish, slightly bigger. And this is a type of technology that's kind of complicated to learn, but I can set this dish up and get online anywhere that I can see the southern sky. It's basically like a TV a TV satellite dish. So I am online in places that nobody else is online because there are very few of these dishes. I tend to stay in places that are either like national forest or boondocking around. So I pay very, very little. I used to keep track. I budgeted $500 a month originally for campground fees, and I'm paying less than $100 a month average because I really don't stay in commercial campgrounds very much. I have solar panels and an engine generator, so I don't need to plug in. I have a TV a satellite dish, so I don't need cable, and I have all my internet stuff, so I don't need their Wi-Fi network. And so I can just go to places that are, you know, completely, you know, out of the way and off the grid. Along the Pacific Coast Highway, there are a lot of places where there's no cell phone reception.
What's a typical day for you like out there for you and your wife? You're living out there in the middle of boondock country. You've got the internet, but what do you do all day long out there besides write for roadtrekking.com, of course?
Mostly I sit around and observe the scenery and play on the internet, maybe watch a little TV. It's really I'm getting good at this retirement thing. I'm coming up on 4 years, and I've learned to be still and enjoy life as it goes by. And so I don't really have a big schedule. We'll usually sit for several days and then move and then sit for another week or so.
One last question, and that is just the day-to-day managing. Unlike a house where you can stock up a great big refrigerator, you've got to live with a fairly small refrigerator in that van, and you can't take as many clothes with you as you want. So how do you handle laundry and food? I mean, you must have to go into town on some occasions. How do you manage all of that?
Yeah, at least, about once a week, and certainly by 2 weeks, I'm usually out of food and all my clothes are dirty. So it's time to hit the laundry. I carry a big bunch of quarters with me in case change isn't available. And so I go in and do all our laundry, which is two or three loads. We don't have that much. And we stock up on food. I've gotten very good at shopping and packaging food. So the grocery store packaging is all designed to make it look attractive in the store, and I usually have to repackage it and freeze enough meat and other things so that I usually can go, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks very easily, and a month in a pinch, operating out of, you know, I've got tuna and Spam and chili and all kinds of stuff. And I make my own bread when I run out of bread. So
you make your own bread in the van?
No, outside. It's I have a little oven that I run on a gas burner, and it's a little tin oven that if you pay very close attention, you can hold a temperature for an hour long enough to bake bread.
Many of the things that Camp Skunk has just said about, he has written, and you'll find photographs at roadtrekking.com.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking.
All right, that's episode number one. And I'd love to hear your reaction to it. Roadtrekking.com is the blog. Thank you guys so much for being a part of this and enjoying the RV lifestyle, I think, as much as we do. We hope to hear Mac from many more of you. Just use that link in the blog. Till next time, I'll see you out there road trekking.